Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
It's Mail It In Friday.
I called in sick. I don't work in the rain.
Well, I kind of mailed that in.
You can't deliver mail?
Why not?
Yeah, whatever.
I guess you're right. It's just walking around and putting it in the boxes.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes, Gord Miller, we're here until 7 p.m. Lou Lamorello, the GM of the Islanders, will join us around 6:10. Catch up with Lou. I have a feeling he's probably not going to give us access into the pitch to John Tavares the way that Kyle Dubas did earlier in the week. But we'll see. We'll see what we can pry out of Lou.
You'll get it out of him.
You think so?
Oh, I do.
I don't know about that.
I do think you'll get it out of him.
You got Dave Poulin in here, too.
With the heat lamp and the rubber hose, I might have to beat it out of him. But Lou, the man who once listed a player being injured as having overall body soreness.
I don't think he's giving us access to anything. But are you being serious, Pooley, or are you just...
I'm being serious. I think you'll get it out of him.
What are you going to ask him?
Well, I'd like to find out what his pitch was.
I want to find out about the statement where he said individual success.
Yes.
Well, but he said it again.
Yeah.
He said again now this week that this team has had a lot of individual success, but not team success. So it wasn't only the quote from, you know, thanking the process or whatever. He has repeated that mantra again.
Right. See, I didn't take that as a shot at Tavares the way some people have. I took it as a shot at the organization that's been a disaster for 9 years. Yeah. And what else are you going to have but individual success if the team sucks?
I guess because the word you know, we congratulate you on your success with the Islanders would have been a statement.
But what success?
Well, you had a great career with the Islanders.
Individual career.
Right, but why single out individual?
I don't know.
It is a word that jumped right off the page at me.
Really?
And just similarly, two words that jumped out of his when he was removed in Toronto. Yeah. And he said, today, it is my intent to honor the contract.
Yeah.
Two words stepped out. Today and intent.
Yeah. I remember that stood out
to me.
Those
two words.
Because we all knew Lou wasn't sticking around. There was no way Lou was going to stick around.
It was very carefully worded.
Let me ask you guys a question. If Lou actually stuck around as the consultant here with the Maple Leafs, do you think he would have been included in the Tavares pitch? Do you think it would have been Shanahan, Dubas, Lou, and
no
Babcock?
Question. No question for me if he was still here.
Yeah.
You would have included him in that?
Yes.
Well, would I have included him or would he have been included?
You're
asking
questions.
If you thought, yeah.
Do I think he would and would you?
I think they probably would have, although it seemed like everybody went in with three, didn't it? Like, did we see anyone go with four?
The owner in San Jose went in, but...
He did, and Doug Wilson's son was there, and Doug, so yeah, there were
And Pete DeBoer,
There were more than three there.
I would not have brought him with me. I wouldn't have, because what's come out of this is, and I don't know how much truth there is in all this, but Shanahan went out of his way to promote that this was Dubas that ran everything. Yeah. Dubas put all the work in, and I don't dispute he put a lot of the work in, but I think Shanahan and Babcock factored into the pitch as well. But if you throw Lou into that mix, like I think that would have been very uncomfortable for Kyle Dubas to have Lou Lamorello in that room.
And essentially you eliminated those questions by making the move you did.
Right.
And that's you eliminated all of those questions. They were all removed.
Now,
so you didn't have to go on an individual basis and say, and even have anyone think, is Lou going to be involved here or is he not?
And you know what's going to happen next week is July 15th comes. In addition to being my mother's birthday, that's the day that Mark Hunter can go somewhere.
Really?
And if I had to bet, I'll bet that rental car outside, which is not mine, that... He goes to the island.
You think so? Yeah. But how does that add up, though? Because I thought the whole point was Mark Hunter wants to be a GM.
He will be.
How?
So Lou says, you come aboard as our director of player personnel, senior vice president, whatever. And then when I step aside, you're the GM.
And the one wrinkle could be there is son Chris.
Right.
That could be the one wrinkle in that formula.
Chris Lamorello works for the Islanders.
And was there and was an assistant GM in Jersey and ran all their minor league systems. So I knew Chris from the American Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
he... Does he not fly?
Chris?
I heard a story once that he doesn't fly.
Well, he gets to Hilton Head for the American League meetings, so
you can drive.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lou's coming up later this afternoon. What's up with Erik Karlsson here, Pooley? Like, what are we waiting for here? What's going on here? Because there are rumors. Last night it was Donnie's going to Tampa. Then that got dragged back. Now he's not going to Tampa. Could be third teams involved in this. What are you bracing
for?
Well,
Brian, if you watch SportsCenter tonight or That's Hockey with Gino Retta at 7 p.m.
Yeah. Or listen to Overdrive right now.
Gino and I had a conversation this morning, and he said, you know, we've talked about the players, we've talked about the cap, we've talked about all those things. Could you just break it down from a management standpoint on what the holdup is? And the first part of the holdup is that this is a legacy trade. The second part for me is the size of your group and what exactly your group can do. And I think Stevie Yzerman's effectiveness in getting complicated deals done. Think of Martin St. Louis. Think of the deals that he's got done. Is that his group is himself, Julien Brisebois, Pat Verbeek, who represents the pro scouting side and is assistant GM, and Al Murray on the amateur side.
Yeah,
four. And
Tom Curvers was part of that.
Right.
He's gone to Minnesota.
Right. And also with, assuming he keeps in conversation with the owner, but has full autonomy to do what has to be done. A lot of people aren't like that. And, you know, and I'm not sure exactly if you were to say to me right now, what is Pierre Dorion's inner group? I'm not sure how I'd answer that right now.
Well, I would think Melnick would be a part of it.
But he's not there. Yeah. And
it's interesting about Tampa because if you look at them, their team is signed for next year. Really, Adam Ernie's the only guy that they, you know, don't have signed yet, and he was a healthy scratch most of the year. So they can add Karlsson. If they can get the Callahan contract off the books, it gets tricky. You can't buy him out. He's had shoulder surgeries out till December probably, so you can't buy him out.
Right.
But if you can get someone to take that contract, Karlsson's number is only 6.5 this year.
Yeah, so he's fine this year.
He can slip Karlsson in this year. The problem is if you want to sign him beyond this year, and even if you don't, Tampa's facing a major cap jam next summer. Now, what do you give Kucherov?
But you've got three expiring contracts on D.
Yeah.
The only one of which you may keep is Strowman, because Girardi would expire and Coburn would expire and go.
Right, but
there's enough money there. And don't forget, next year that's approximately $8+ million. Those two guys, and you've got his 6.5 from this year. You've got 14.5.
You got to do Braden Point next summer.
Yeah, it's complicated, no question.
I wonder if Tampa is married to the idea of keeping Kucherov.
Wow.
He had no even strength goals in their last 12 playoff games. He had two power play goals in their last 12 playoff games. He faded a little bit down. Like, he's a good player.
If they are choosing not to be married to him, he won't be single for long.
No, someone would scoop him up.
No, for sure they would. But here's the thing. You got to make decisions. And there aren't many wingers that make, you know, north of 8. Claude Giroux does, but he's a center who's moved to the wing. There are some, and Ovechkin leads the way at 9. But if you got to keep guys, you're keeping your centers, your D, the goalies
are getting there now.
Yeah. So could you, you know, you pay Braden Point, you got Stamkos, you've got kids coming, they draft really well. You could, if Kucherov's not part of the equation, it gives them a lot more flexibility. They had a real tough contract negotiation with them last time.
Well, here's another angle, though. Somehow, and credit to Steve Yzerman, he pulled this off. He got Stamkos to agree to 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
How he got Hedman to agree to, I believe, 8.25 is beyond me. And don't give me the state tax crap, because if you're that good of a player, you can say, thank you, Steve, I'll take the state tax, and I'll still take the $11 million. Karlsson ain't falling for that. I don't see it.
But I think he sells the sneaker and jeans theory very, very well.
Yeah, he does.
Very well.
That's
But sneaker and jeans theory is that once you have a really nice pair of jeans and a really nice pair of sneakers, then you're set, right? You can't wear two pairs of jeans at the same time. So, in other words, when you get to 40 or 60 or $70 million, you're going to be fine.
Right, but Vegas can do that,
too, though. He sells that thought process very well to those guys.
I don't dispute that. But, again, what is stopping Karlsson from saying, thank you, Steve, I would love that, but I'll still take the $11
million? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what's stopping him from saying that?
In which case, Yzerman says it won't be here.
Then don't make the trade. No, unless it's a one-year deal.
A one-year deal.
Which I would still probably do because they're that good.
If you're Tampa, your goalie was a Vezina Trophy finalist. You have the Norris Trophy winner. You're stacked up front. You lost in 7 games in the conference final.
And, Gordo, I was trying to think, as we look ahead, if he were to go to Tampa, which, have there been recent teams with two Norris Trophy winners?
Anaheim in 07.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, like, I got a funny email.
They went ahead and won a cup.
Our audience relations.
Not bad.
So a guy emailed our audience relations department really upset with me about, you know, why aren't you saying that, how can the Leafs manage Carlson and Hedman when people here were talking about how do you manage Matthews and Tavares? Well, you play two defensemen at once. Mm-hmm. You, unless it's a power play, you don't play two centers at once. So there's
you can buy them 30-plus minutes each.
So you think about Anaheim in 07. Pronger and Niedermayer. There was when the ice time was first available, like to be broken down and scraped. There were playoff games where one or the other was on the ice for all but like
That's
4 minutes.
Brilliant.
Because only after a penalty kill, when they played together, would they not be on the ice. So if you have Carlson and you have Hedman,
it's an embarrassment of riches.
You can have one or the other on the ice almost the entire game.
So. Let's put a Toronto spin on this, because Toronto's still buzzing from getting Tavares.
Sure.
If Carlson goes there and somehow Yzerman works this trade out without taking a significant piece, which I don't see how Ottawa can allow that to happen. Like, I just don't see how you can trade within your division a guy like Erik Karlsson and not pull out a significant piece that's on this team right now.
I'm looking for two.
Yeah, so am I. Yeah. Like, Braden Point would have to be a part of the deal.
I don't think Tampa will trade Braden Point.
I don't think they will either. But if you're Ottawa, you hang up the phone then.
You say, we'll go to Vegas, we'll go to whoever else.
Like, I mean, thanks, Steve.
But
what does it do, though, if it works out? If Yzerman pulls this off and they're still loaded, and now you add Carlson to Hedman and McDonough, they just locked up long-term. Yeah. You got Vasilevskiy, you got a good coach.
Think of McDonough as a three.
Right. Oh. Like, how are the Leafs?
Good. Strawman is a four.
Are the Leafs close? Are they on par with Tampa? I mean, you said, I believe, a couple of days ago you thought the Leafs were the best team in the East.
I did.
If Carlson goes to Tampa, how does that affect
that? If Carlson goes to Tampa, that skewers it.
So forwards, the Leafs are better.
Yeah.
Right?
Up front, the middle, for sure.
Well, up the middle. And even on the wings.
I mean, it's interesting with Tavares, but Tampa was number one in goals scored last year, number three in power play.
Mm. Yeah.
And it was their defense that needed improving.
Yeah. So, on defense, Tampa would be better, and Vasilevskiy in goal over Freddie Anderson, probably. Right? I mean, Vasilevskiy was a...
It's pretty close, though.
Vasilevskiy was a vet in the finals.
And so. Vasilevskiy behind that defense core is much better than Anderson behind the defense core in Toronto.
So, the intriguing thing for Tampa is, if you trade for Carlson, now, presumably, as you said, Dave, there's assets from the roster going the other way, so that'll take some of that off. Would you then consider signing Carlson to an extension, getting rid of some of your older players and turning it over to kids up front? Like, you're keeping Stamkos, you're trying to keep Point, but now Anthony Cirelli, who played for them, you know, was a regular regular season playoffs, he gets plugged in.
Yanni Gourde,
Cal Foote, you know, in 2 years, then becomes a regular on your D. Like, they've drafted really well.
And this is the art that Winnipeg's trying to pull off as we speak.
I was just going to ask you that. Yeah. So do you follow that model?
It's exactly what Winnipeg's trying to do.
So just spend. Because Steve Yzerman's from, you know, the one thing Detroit had all those years. You think about when they won the Stanley Cup with Lidstrom, Rafalski, Stewart, Cronwall. You know, their top four.
Stud back end.
Brad Stewart was a second overall draft pick. When he got to Detroit, they said, we don't care if you ever get a point.
Mm-hmm.
You're out there to be mobile,
settle in comfortably at number four,
and move the puck. That's what he was a great four for them.
And that could be essentially what McDonough ends up being, 3-4.
You just say to McDonough, you're out there to kill. You're here to kill penalties.
Points are a bonus.
Move the puck a little bit. You're not. I mean, if you look at it this way, Brian, if you had, from an ice time perspective, this is how Anaheim did it. So you got 120 minutes in a game for defensemen to play. You play two at a time. So Pronger, Niedermayer were like 27 each. Right, so you're at 54 minutes. Then you come back with your second pair. Now, they were...
And Bosch was pretty good for them.
And they're out there with two other guys who they're carrying.
Two other guys. So really, your third pair only has to play like 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, and don't you think that's kind of going to apply here in Toronto with that fourth line center position? Like, in a similar way?
Well,
like, they don't play as many minutes, but...
What would you hope, though, is your fourth line center in... plays some sort of functional role as a penalty killer.
Yeah.
What if he has to play a role besides just being the fourth line?
What if you do what Tampa does and some other teams and just go 7D and 11 forwards? Mm-hmm. You know, Tampa was so deep at center.
They don't like 7D.
Well,
especially with studs
and
like
Babcock
that.
Doesn't like it either. But the one thing that we saw with Tampa that works pretty well is if you've got real good centers, you can rotate them through more. If you're only playing three centers, they can rotate through your fourth line, right?
Yeah, with special teams and everything else that happens.
Yeah. Now, the only problem is it makes it more difficult to play the, you know, two centers together in the power play. A
couple more points on Ottawa on what would hold things up. Now you're getting the deal done. You've got the pieces in place. Now the agent has to get involved to get the deal structured. So that holds it up for a little bit. And then when do you officially say to other teams, we are done, we're closed?
Yeah.
Because so now you've got other teams lurking, and they can, and there are guys that like to jump in late just to mess things up,
right?
You know, and so you've got all those different parts happening, you know, and then on top of all of those things that we just mentioned, what if they are trying to include a third team to get that Ryan? Well, that's just who's talking to him.
Could Bobby Ryan be included in that too?
Well,
in terms of a third team?
Yeah. How does? Yeah, maybe. And if they can get Callahan off the books. Now, maybe Callahan, I mean, Callahan's had two major hip operations, right? Now he's had major shoulder surgery. It's going to keep him out. I mean, if he's on LTI, long-term injury, long enough.
With a team that uses it effectively.
Yeah. So, I mean, the intriguing question for Tampa. I mean, balancing the short-term versus the long-term. I mean, you know, we talk about this every year, Brian, at the deadline. Six teams go for it. At the most, only one wins.
Macro,
and
sometimes, micro.
And sometimes a team that wins doesn't go for it at the deadline. Washington didn't really. They got Kempney for a third-round pick.
They didn't load up at the deadline. And they got Yerbeck from Montreal.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't really.
Hoping one of them worked.
They weren't trading a first-round pick for a guy in an expiring contract. They weren't in that market at all.
Yeah. Dave Poulin in studio. Brian Hayes, Gord Miller here on Overdrive. The Leafs made a signing today, Tyler Ennis. And you know, he's had a lot of injury problems the past few years. And concussion problems, right? But a small guy,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, I wonder if Babcock's going to start freaking out here.
Well, you've got your choice at fourth line center right now. You got a small guy or you got a really big guy in Freddie Gauthier. You know, a younger guy with an upside still. So, you know, Gauthier must need waivers this year. I haven't even looked, but you'd have to.
I mean, this is 5 years of pro. Yeah. You would have to think so, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to get through because somebody's going to, because he shows enough signs and he can win a faceoff and kill a penalty. And once again, you want that fourth line center to be able to play a role. Like, ideally, if you're fourth line, each one of them on it does something special teams related.
Yeah.
It's magic.
Yeah. For sure. That's how the games change, right, David? Because you don't have a fighter anymore.
No, but even...
So you're not carrying a guy who just fights.
Yeah, I hate to refer to Winnipeg all the time, but Joel Armia was on the fourth line but playing on the power play, and Matthew Perreault could play on the power play, and, you know, Andrew Kopp could kill penalty.
The Islanders, right? When they had Martin, Cizikas, and Clutterbuck... That may have been the best fourth line of the league because you didn't have to worry about them. You could put them out against almost anybody. They'd be fine.
Yeah, in a defensive role.
You'd have to hide them. They could kill penalties. They could, you know, disrupt the other team's top players. Like, you love that. And now a fourth line that plays, right, is really a component of most good teams. Most teams have a fourth line that you don't have to hide.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure that Tyler Ennis, health-wise, that's been his issue. And, you know, once again, he's not a big physical guy.
Well, and it's a depth signing. It's the league minimum. They can bury that in the minors. Won't count against the cap if he doesn't make the team, or maybe the 13th forward. But, you know, I'm thinking more philosophically. We're still trying to figure out exactly what Dubas envisions here. You know, it's easy to sell people on John Tavares. You know, that's a pretty good sales pitch. But where else are you looking to build? What else are you looking to add? And at some point, Babcock is going to push back, if he's not already, in terms of what he envisions, because there's some old school there with Mike Babcock. Oh, yeah. Like, he likes some size.
He likes to keep the fly. His term is keep the flies off.
Yes, and there's Pollock's in Dallas now. Matt Martin's back on the island. There is not much size here on this team.
If you sit back and wait until the end of August, there's going to be 75 to 100 guys that played some games in the league last year that won't have a contract. Mm-hmm.
But ideally, you'd like on your fourth line to be... You know, if you're loaded up the way you are, your first line stays exactly the same. Your second line is Tavares, and I would put Andreas Johnsson on the left side and Marner on the right. And then your third line leaves Kadri and Marleau together, one of Connor Brown or Kasperi Kapanen. And then the other one is your 10th forward playing in a special team function. Mm-hmm. And then Carl Grundstrom could be your fourth line left wing and a Gauthier in the middle. And there you've got Grundstrom does have grit. He's not a tough guy, but he has grit.
Right. Well, and Hyman is, I mean, he doesn't fight necessarily. No. He will if he has to, but he hits everything in sight.
I'm just looking at the list of unrestricted free agents at center that you could be looking at. You know, Torrey Mitchell, Sean Mathias, Mark Letestu, Lance Bolma, Dom Moore's on there again. I mean, there are enough guys that you would look at and say, you know, I mean, Daniel Winnick's an unrestricted free agent. I mean,
and you can get those guys at one-year deals.
Well, not just that, Brian. You get them on PTOs. Mm-hmm. You bring them in on a professional tryout in August. If they don't have a contract in August, they're going to go on a PTO. And we talked about this the other day. There were, I think the number was 80. 80 guys went to camp last year on PTOs, and I think 11 of them got contracts.
Yeah, that's scary.
Right? That's your only choice, right? It's either that or Europe.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're a guy,
that's the reality of the salary cap.
If you're Daniel Winnick and you're sitting there at the end of August, then take a one-way deal at $650, or go to camp on a PTO. They give you a 1-year deal at $650 on a one-way. You take it.
Mm-hmm. Dave Pullen in studio. Did you guys read into? I was surprised this did make more waves, and maybe it's because, you know, I haven't been listening to every single show in the city or reading every single piece in the paper, and I haven't personally brought this up. But when Babcock was asked after the Tavares signing, he had Hyman off the Matthews line.
Yeah.
And the Matthews-Babcock meeting and everyone's...
July.
I understand that. but then, Pooley, if it's July, why not just say, obviously, we're keeping that line together? Like, why would he take
more
Hyman...
More fun this way.
He's got to be careful with this market, though.
Who did he have there?
He had Marlowe.
Marlowe.
He had Marlowe with Matthews and Nylander. He had Hyman down. The reason I bring it up is, again, because there was something happened between Matthews and Babcock. Babcock wasn't just in the area. He went to meet him. It got out. Something went on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if it had something to do with who Matthews is playing with. He's played almost every shift of his NHL career 5-on-5 with Hyman on the wing. I love Zach Hyman and what he brings, but it wouldn't shock me if that was a part of the conversation. Can you put Marlowe with me? Maybe Janssen.
It very well might have been. And I think, you know, the point is now you have more top six players. And whether it's top nine, but whatever, however you want to configure it. You know, it doesn't matter to me what you call me as long as you play me.
But if you look at Babcock in Detroit, His MO was always two offensive players with a guy. A defensive slash digger slash mm-hmm. whatever you want to call him, right?
Always his philosophy.
Always his philosophy.
But I don't remember him flying over to Sweden to meet with Zetterberg in a week after meetings.
That very well could have happened.
But
we would know that.
We do know that early on in his time in Detroit that Nick Lidstrom sat down with him. Because mm-hmm. Lidstrom's talked about it and said, you know, You gotta pull your foot off the gas a little bit here.
It was the other way around. The coach didn't sit down with the player. The player said to the coach,
Nick,
we're going to sit down.
Meeting. Nick said, come to my office.
Right.
Wait, you have an office?
Well, I do think that's something that people are going to track, I mean, without question.
Well, now, what's interesting about this is that now it's not just that ice time's available. Now it's being broken down into who plays with who for how much. Right? You know who's on the ice with who for how long. You can break it down to not just on the fly, but from face-offs.
Every which way.
You know exactly who the coach wants on the ice at a given moment and who he wants them with. And that turns into a whole discussion. And it's not overstating the case. I think the biggest revolution in hockey in the last 20 years is not the disclosure of salaries. It's the disclosure of ice time.
That's really funny.
It's the disclosure of ice time.
I remember in college, the college coaches said, don't be bringing those minutes down to the locker room after the game.
The American,
like, don't bring them down.
And you know what? In the American League, they are still not available.
Really?
No.
It's great, isn't it?
If the Leafs want to know how much a guy for the Grand Rapids Griffins plays, unless they track it themselves, they have no access. I'm pretty sure that's still the case.
It was the case.
I think you're right, because I remember looking it up during the playoff run. I wanted to find out how many minutes Dermott was playing.
It's not available.
And you're right, because I went to the website, because I didn't think he was playing as much as I thought he would be playing, considering he was an NHL guy. And I was like, I wonder how many minutes is this guy playing? And I couldn't find the minutes.
And it's tracked, because the Marlies know the numbers.
Well, why wouldn't you track your own minutes?
No. But when the Marlies played Texas, there's a stats crew in both rinks that's doing the real-time stats, and both teams get access to their to the numbers. They're just not publicly revealed. And they're not on the website, and you can't find out the other team's numbers.
Well, in the NHL, you can, and it's a beautiful thing.
It is, and it's positive and negative, right? Because now, Jágr used to... I remember Vladimir Malahov, who's a great guy. Vladdy's a great guy. New Jersey won the cup in Dallas in 2000. He's in the dressing room. The cup is 10 feet from him, and he's looking at the game sheet to see how much he played. The cup almost hit him.
And he's more concerned about why he didn't get to 23 minutes that night. But that's how you determine how much the coach likes you. Let's be honest.
And when you play. Who plays when?
Right. Right.
He's used for you and against you,
Who's playing with a one-goal lead in the last minute?
Anyway. It is only July, probably.
Brian Hayes is always on the ice in the last minute with a lead.
Always. Very reliable guy. All right, Pooley, good seeing you, man.
Always a pleasure.
Where are you off to now? Sports Center, that's hockey?
I've done Sports Center. I'm going to do TH.
Car wash.
The last Geno Red of the year.
Oh, yeah, this is it for Geno.
Join us tonight.
Yeah.
Of the season. I'm assuming Geno will be back in 28.
Calendar year.
Yeah, he'll be back in September, which means the Carlson
Fiscal year.
Trade.
The Carlson trade will happen tomorrow.
Or 7:31 p.m. Eastern time.
Quiet time. Yeah. Depends how good the trade it is.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay, guys. Have a great
good
weekend.
Good seeing you, Pooley. There's Dave Pullen, our hockey analyst. We got the Yankees in town. I'm heading down there tomorrow.
You going tomorrow?
Yes, I am. And actually, I want to get into this conversation because I'm going down there with a bunch of guys, and the email chain is circulating about what the plans are, and I personally don't really want to be included in the pregame plans. I'll tell you why. We'll get into that next. All right, so I'm down at the Jays game tomorrow.
Okay.
And there's going to be a bunch of us down there. I'm looking forward to it. The weather's going to be spectacular. This is the game I told Ross Atkins about a couple of days ago.
It was really hot, and they closed the roof.
I'm hoping that that's not the case. I understand that you have to do that.
Buddies of mine went last week, and they were mad that the roof was closed, 33 degrees Celsius, and they were mad the roof was closed.
Yeah, I would prefer it open even with that kind of heat, but I understand that
it's dangerous, right?
Yeah, it's very dangerous, so I get it. And it's dangerous for the players who are, they're wearing pants and all that, and so I don't know. I'm assuming that the roof is going to be open, but that's not my beef. We have access. We're sitting up in a box because there's 20 of us, and we're up in a suite, which means you can get into the park earlier. You can get in there half an hour before the ticket owners can get in there, which means you can get in there when the Yankees are going to be in the cage.
Okay.
And all these guys on the chain, they're like, well, let's show up early. We want to get there to see Judge and Stanton. I don't really care. I don't find entertainment value in batting practice. Am I wrong in that? Because I'm sensing that I am largely in the minority on this.
Now, are these other guys in broadcasting?
No, they're just regular guys.
I think that we sometimes take for granted the things that we get to do. I do a thing for charities every year where I auction off a day with the Leafs, a day with us at the Leafs. So you come to the morning skate, go to Babcock's press conference, come to the pregame meal with us, and then sit in the booth for the game. And one of the highlights for people is coming to the morning skate. Right, they love it.
Mm-hmm.
Just watching the guys fiddle around, do their thing. Half the time they're optional, so not all the guys are there. They love it. We don't get to do that every day. To watch Aaron Judge, hit bombs in batting practice.
That might be what it is.
You've been to 1,000 batting practices in your day, right?
No, I can't say I've been to 1,000. I have access to go to them if I would want to.
And you've been to lots.
Sure.
And I've been to lots. And then, you're working and doing all that. So, what bugs me more is the fact that it's going to take 39 emails to sort this out. I hate that. Right? I'm bringing salad. I'm like, no.
No, we're not doing any of that, man. Believe me, there isn't that much that's been put into it. Here's Ryan Rucco of ESPN and the YES Network. He's in town calling the game for the Yankees tonight. Ryan, we're just talking about this, the buzz around the Yankees whenever they roll into a new town, that people want to get down there early and watch Judge and Stanton in the cage. You've probably seen them, hundreds of times by now. Is it still appealing to you? Are you surprised by how many people are into that?
I'm not surprised, guys, because I feel it myself. There are times when, let's say, maybe I'm like, okay, this is the time I should go grab some food, or this is when I should make the walk up to the press box, or whatever it is, and I will stop myself and say, wait, Stan and Judge are about to hit. So if I'm feeling that way and I'm exposed to it as much as I am, then I certainly understand why there's excitement about it from those who don't get to see it all the time, because it definitely doesn't get old. It's just, I mean, it's ridiculous to watch. It really is.
So what kind of routine do these guys have then in the cage? I mean, are they spraying the ball all over the park, or do Judge and Stanton roll in and it's just like, we're trying to put this into the upper deck, especially at the Rogers Center?
Yeah, no, they do have a routine where they're spraying the ball a bit, because both of them have an incredible amount of power to the opposite field. I think right now Judge has hit 11 of his 24 home runs to the opposite field, and Stanton's hit 9. So, you know, they're spraying it all over, but they'll get into it a little bit with them. They just start trying to launch. You know, there are certain times throughout it where they'll really try and outdo each other and have some fun with it. But not without deviating from, not without making sure that they're in line with whatever their routine is as far as actually getting ready for the game, especially for two guys who do use the whole field. They're not just, smash hitters. They're guys who really do use the opposite field.
Ryan, is there any concern about how much the Yankees strike out?
I think there's always like a little concern about that, but I don't think it's as heavy this year, simply because if you look at the success they've had against good teams this year, I think a lot of times when a team strikes out a ton, hits a lot of home runs, we associate that with them mashing against poor pitching, beating up on poor teams, and struggling against better competition. But that has not been the case this year for the Yankees. They've had really good offensive performances against some good pitching, and they've played incredibly well against good teams this year. I mean, their record against plus 500 teams has been superb. So I don't think there are any concerns, because there aren't any concerns right now about their ability to beat good pitching. And if you look at some of their hitters, like sometimes there are those guys who they put up their numbers against bad pitching and they struggle against good pitching. We all know that those hitters exist. I just don't think the Yankees have those kind of hitters. Like when I watch Gleyber Torres against good pitching, I see he can hit them. When I watch Miguel Andujar against good pitching, I see he can hit them. I feel the same way about Aaron Judge. So I don't think those concerns exist right now as far as the strikeouts go, other than it's just built into sort of the baseball fan psyche to associate strikeouts with something bad. But I think in the way it actually manifests with this team, it's not concerning or troubling.
With Ryan Rucco of the YES Network and ESPN, he's in town calling the game tonight. Jays, Yankees down at the Rogers Center. And tomorrow should be a pitching duel, if it's possible, with the Yankees offense. I mean, Happ is on the mound tomorrow, and Severino's on the mound as well on Saturday. But a lot of people up here are focused on what Happ could showcase tomorrow, because obviously the Yankees are one of a few teams that they know where they're going. They know they're a playoff team, and the expectation would be or should be that they're likely looking to acquire some help, and it more than likely is going to be in the rotation come the end of the month. Could you see Jay Happ being a guy that the Yankees could target?
Definitely. I think he's a guy who's experienced, veteran, has had success in the AL East, lefty, another lefty to add to the Yankee rotation. The Red Sox have fared much better against righties than lefties this year, although they're still over 500 against lefty starters. It's a significantly lower win percentage than what they do against righties. So I certainly think there could be some comfort there for the Yankees. I don't know what level prospect they would surrender for half a season of Jay Happ, because he is not necessarily the guy who slots right into, a playoff rotation. You feel like, oh, okay, we have a dominant guy on the mound, where you would feel that way if you somehow fired a Syndergaard or a DeGrom. So I don't know if Jay Happ is going to require, having to deal a Clint Frazier, who more and more is looking like, a top level outfield prospect. It's already proven to a certain degree he can play at this level. But Yankees farm system's deep, and so they have options. And I think that they will seriously consider whether or not those options align with what the Blue Jays might be interested in, because I think Happ does maybe fit the bill for what they need and the price tag they're willing to surrender better than anybody else who's out there right now.
And Ryan, that's kind of the point about the Yankees. When they were great in the 90s and into the 2000s, they were a lot of homegrown players. And people misunderstand that about the Yankees, that, you know, they talk about their free agents, their payroll, everything else. They spent a lot of money to keep their own players, and they seem to be back to that now, aren't they?
They really are. I mean, if you look across the diamond, right? I mean, Aaron Judge, homegrown. Gleyber, you could say, is homegrown because he was a prospect acquired for Chapman, right? Miguel Andujar, homegrown. Gary Sanchez, homegrown. Greg Bird, homegrown. Brett Gardner, homegrown. I mean, it's incredible. And even a guy like Aaron Hicks and Didi Gregorius, those were undervalued assets they traded for elsewhere that really have only made their major league dent here with the Yankees. So virtually across the board, the guys who they have making a huge impact outside of Giancarlo Stanton are guys who came up through their system or whose major league careers blossomed once they got here. And so I also think this, like, there is a difference to the way the fan base connects with the team that is built with homegrown players. You know, winning obviously is the number one way to connect your fans to your team, but there are ways in which you win that can make a team feel like it's more a part of the community, can make the fans feel more connected. And I think the fact that this team is, you know, littered with prospects who they've heard about for years and homegrown talent has really connected the fan base to them, and it's generated even more excitement for this group. And it also allows you to feel like this could be a sustained run because you have a lot of controllable assets at a very nice price for a lot of years with a lot of talent.
Great stuff, Ryan. Enjoy it tonight. Thank you for doing this.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
There's Ryan Rucco of the YES Network and ESPN joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com. He's absolutely right with that final point. There is much more of a connection.
Oh, for sure.
To players who were drafted and developed and started their career in a respective market.
And you know what? When you get a team of mercenaries, I don't call them, shouldn't call them mercenaries, but a team built through free agency that were from other teams, hey, you're always happy when they win. But when it's your guys, there's no question there's more connection to that. There's more. And I think the one thing that we underestimate, I mean, John Tavares was really emotional at his press conference when he was announced to the Leafs about leaving the island. And you'd say, you know, as an outsider, how could you be upset? I mean, they're going to be in two buildings for the next 3 years. They've played 24 playoff games in 9 years. You know, that's the team that drafted him. And there's always going to be that thing for the team that drafted you. There always will be.
Well, using the Maple Leafs as a comparison, they are a lot like the Yankees. And Tavares may be playing the role of Stanton.
Yeah.
But you look at, like he just said, Judge and Sanchez and Gregorius and even Gleyber Torres, who they got from the Cubs, but still didn't make his major league career until he got here or his debut here. That's Marner, Matthews, Nylander, Riley, Kadri.
Right. And in the 90s, it was, right, Rivera was a Yankee.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Jeter was a Yankee.
Pettit, Bernie Williams, Paul O'Neill.
Yeah. You know, I mean, go right down the line, right? Mm-hmm. Those were Yankees.
Yep. Posada.
Yeah. Jorge Posada was it. So, I mean, it's funny in baseball, as much as you talk about, the one thing that's not fair in baseball is that the draft is not as random. Because teams, you know who the good players are, and if you're willing to pay the signing bonus, you can do it. I mean, a lot of times guys fall to the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Cubs, because teams just aren't going to pay them.
Yeah, and
like,
I think
teams knew how good certain guys. I remember Jabba Chamberlain. He had Tommy John surgery. I mean,
but he dropped to like 22 or something, and the Yankees.
Yeah,
took
because
him.
Because
baseball is trying to clean that up, and they have to an extent with slotting and stuff like that. And they're cleaning it up now with international signing as well.
So just imagine for a second if Rasmus Dahlin, who went first overall to Buffalo, imagine there's no limit on salary on signing bonus. So he's going to command like a $25 million signing bonus. So Buffalo has the first pick. They're probably not doing that.
I don't know. That owner's got some money.
Well,
man.
He does, but I mean, they might look long and hard at, you know, spending $25 million to sign on a guy. No, okay, so then go past Dahlin, right? The next guy, Svechnikov.
Well, Carolina's not doing it.
So Carolina's not paying Svechnikov, so he falls.
So the Habs get to pick him at three because they would pick.
They will pick. You know what I mean? Like that's so baseball drafting, it has been. Now, as you said, it's changing somewhat, but it has been. The one thing about baseball is they want the big market teams to be good. And I remember Dave Dombrowski was the GM of the Tigers. We had lunch with him one day, and he said, baseball would never do the labor deal that hockey did because they're so dependent on national TV revenue. They need the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Mets to have all the assets at their disposal to be at least competitive. They want, they need, they can't hamstring their good teams. They're big teams, sorry. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I mean, that's proven with ESPN. Like Sunday Night Baseball, it's the same seven or eight teams.
It's like an intramural tournament.
Yeah, the same thing applies in the States with NBC and hockey. It's the same six or seven teams. Hey, all the time.
Hey, hey, hey.
I know those are your guys, but it's the truth.
It's it's not the truth.
It is the truth. It's Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Philly, Boston, New York. That's it. That's it. That you can't dispute this. Well,
I do 25 games a year for NBC.
I'm telling
you.
It's just a reality.
I do more than those seven teams.
When? On their main well, NBC games?
Yeah, Tampa. Tampa's on there a lot.
A lot.
Some.
Get out of here, Gordon. But
my pizza just got.
Yeah, you
got
to get after that. That's perfect good. Perfect cue for me to
I want
to
get
this.
My beef in, though.
All right, we'll do that next, okay?
Okay.
I'll get, well, you can have the floor.
You've had a lot of, you know, you've had a lot of things you wanted to say.
Yes.
Right?
I will give you the floor. Okay. I will give you the floor. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Lou Lamorello at 610. All right, Lou Lamorello will join us in about 20 minutes. Big report out there in the golf world, and I hope this comes to fruition. We'll tell you about that to kick off the 6 p.m. hour. It's Brian Hayes, Gord Miller here on Overdrive. And, Gord, you've been teasing this grievance for about an hour and 50 minutes. So what do you have for
An hour and 49 since I got here a minute late.
True. That's my grievance, that you're a minute late.
Really?
I don't really care.
Now, you've had a lot of grievances. So I was watching the soccer game today, mm-hmm. and I flipped over and watched Wimbledon. And I'm kind of sitting back and thinking, like, it bothers me that in the 21st century, that a club still dictates what color your clothing is. And I get that all white clothing is traditional. But if you really look into what the tradition's about, it's about classism, sexism, and a little bit about racism. And I'm not sure I'm comfortable with them clinging to that tradition. And you know what? There's lots of clubs in Toronto and around that have all white, you know, the all white tennis rule. It's based on, it comes from the 1800s. It was considered unladylike to show perspiration. So ladies wore white because it was considered unfeminine mm-hmm. to wear white. And gentlemen wore white as well, so the perspiration wouldn't show. And also rich people could wear white because when their clothes got dirty,
they could clean them.
They could get them cleaned. So it was also to distinguish yourself from the people that were working because they wouldn't wear white clothes.
Right.
And also, there's a long history, unfortunately, in tennis, like a lot of sports, of racial exclusion. And the All England Club in London is no different. Wimbledon is no different than, you know, Flushing Meadow. The U.S., you know, the USTA was a long time admitting black players. Mm-hmm.
The Masters, Augusta.
Yeah. So I just find it amazing that in this day and age, we're still saying, hey, not only can you not wear white, like Roger Federer a couple of years ago had orange soles in his shoes. Sorry, you, the greatest player who's ever set foot in the grass, too much orange in your shoe.
Well, I kind of knew about that history. I haven't read into that history. I'm not disputing that history. But I think what I would say about it is today, I think we've all grown to a point where we realize that's not why it's applied anymore. That may have been why it was launched, but they're not doing it anymore based on racism or sexism or classism. And there's an element of charm, I think, that comes with this new era where every other tournament, guys are wearing whatever they want, women are wearing whatever they want. It kind of sets Wimbledon apart, and I kind of appreciate that. Like, Wimbledon kind of has more cachet to it than any other tournament.
Except if you're trying to, well, first of all, the United States Open is a better tennis tournament to go to than Wimbledon for a couple of reasons. One, the surface is more fair. When you go to Wimbledon, a rally of more than four strokes is really unusual. Because grass is so fast, the ball just skips.
Right? Okay, but it's the same. You could say the same thing about golf majors. Like, the one that is most prestigious is clearly the Masters.
Right, which has a history, unfortunately, of racial exclusion and,
right.
and a lot of...
But you can't change that. I mean,
well,
that is what it is.
You can, and they've tried to address it in terms of grudgingly opening to minorities and women. But at the same time, I just find it a nod to a past and also a future that you're trying to have inclusion, and you want to look as democratic as possible, and you want to look like any kid can play this sport and be good at it, and they look at that and say it's stuffy. It's for rich people.
Well, I mean,
I love to play tennis, and I'll confess, I'm a member of a club that has an all-white tennis rule, and it drives me nuts.
So wait a minute. You have all this issue with it, yet you practice those rules.
I had to accept it to join the club.
Have to accept it. You could have just said, I'm not going to be a part of this
club. Well, I wasn't for a long time, but if I want to play tennis with my wife, I have to.
What, there's no other clubs in the city?
Well, not that she's a member.
Exactly.
I have tried to get the rule changed at that club.
Oh, I'm sure they love you. Here comes Gord with his rule changes. Close the door quick. All right, we'll pick up on this in the next hour. Lou Lamoriello. I bet you Lou appreciates this.
That was a letdown, wasn't it?
Because if
all white clothing and tennis is the beach you're going to die on, that's
it's a hill that I probably wouldn't die on, but it was a history lesson that I'm not sure everybody's aware of, the history of, you know, the clothing and... I got you. It's a good grievance.
Okay.
But the fact that you actually practice it now and go forward with it...
No, I'm going to
take something away.
I'm going to play tennis this weekend up at the cottage,
mm-hmm.
and I've got... Because you don't have to wear...
Just flamboyant colors.
Black shirt, black shorts, black socks, black shoes.
You be you, Gord.
Johnny Cash.
Be you. Lou Lamoriello will join us at 6:10, and Phil Mickelson taking on Tiger Woods for $10 million. We'll tell you about that next.